friends at Tivoli Brewing Company and the Department of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at MSU Denver, this is Unfiltered. And here are your hosts, Jay Schrader and Dr. Samuel Jay.
It's recording, Jay. It's totally
right,
fine.
It's definitely blinking.
Yeah. It's right. Blinking. We're set. We got two different camera angles. It's like a Martin Scorsese film.
As long
here.
As you have my good side.
Low yeah.
It is. This is, you know, blinking red light. I just keep thinking of speed. So whatever.
Oh my God.
Waiting for the bomb.
Went from Scorsese to a Keanu Reeves movie.
That's
wow. Oh, didn't Scorsese direct that movie?
No, Speed 2.
Speed 2. Okay.
Speed 3. Welcome back to the speed or something. Yeah.
Yeah. How do you take the bus premise and put it on a yacht is beyond me.
It's a fast yacht. All right, Jay, we're not where our guests make their alcohol. We're
no.
at Bird. It's an American eatery on Pearl.
American comfort food, yeah.
I guess they should give us some money to plug this thing.
Seems unlikely.
I know. I'm not they let us hang out here. Yeah, exactly. So we are here with Rick and Owen from Lock & Co. Is it distillery, technically?
Distilling. Okay. Yes. Okay. Thanks for having us.
No, thank you guys so much. We're very excited about this. Shout out to our friend Zach over at Mockery for helping set this up. So,
love you, Zach.
Yeah, he's the man. We don't have any Lock & Co. Beverage in front of us, but maybe soon. I don't know. We'll see. Look at this. Yeah, we know it.
Damn. Look at that.
Okay. All right. We got a little here.
Rick knows the deal.
All right. So I know a little bit about your background. You guys, were you high school buddies?
Yeah, I grew up, went to Littleton High School together.
Okay.
A couple years ahead of Owen. But played lacrosse there, and that's where I was introduced to Owen and his brewing skills.
Okay.
Yeah, so kind of longtime Denver Littleton friends. Growing up in Denver during the craft beer craze, mm-hmm. I was the kid who figured out they would sell you the equipment to make beer.
Second time we've heard that story.
Third. You're now the third one in like the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And hopefully the most handsome.
By far.
Obviously,
yes.
As you can all see this. But yeah, so I figured out they tell you stuff to make beer. Been brewing beer ever since. And my folks were like, cool science. I'm sure that beer tastes great.
Yeah.
Run along. Go play. But Rick and I would be making beer in high school and kind of continued the home brew through college up at CU. And then Rick and I reconnected in grad school at DU.
Okay.
Rick's good buddy worked for Jim Beam at the time.
All right.
So kind of had this brewing background, and we needed part-time jobs, so we worked for Jim Beam. It was great time, but we learned all the nuances between kind of their higher-level whiskeys, right? So all the differences between their bourbons, how to sell them, how to go to restaurants, that kind of aspect.
So what were you doing for Jim Beam together? Like, was it here in town?
So in Denver proper, right. So we'd go around to liquor stores, do hand sales, which would be us talking about the higher-end bourbons, the Bakers, the Basil Haydens, as well as going to restaurants and doing staff trainings for the staff to educate them on the brands to help promote those.
Okay. Were you two the only ones for Jim Beam here in town, or they're a big team?
By no means, no. We were just two. They were kind of going a different route with some of their higher-end bourbons and looking at getting guys who look like they drink bourbon and maybe aren't as soft around the eyes as some of the other promotional hires
that
they
makes
have.
Sense. Yes. So you guys weren't wearing tube tops out there?
Well, I was, but at all
you
times,
are very
I am
tan.
Now. You just can't tell.
Exactly.
But so Rick and I kind of reconnected, worked for Jim Beam. I wrote a business plan on an organic brewery at DU, which translated well, kind of moved over to the whiskey world at that time, took some local distilling classes, and then bought a still, right? So wanted those classes to make sure I didn't, blow up the garage when I started playing around.
Fair enough.
Safety first, or at least in the top five.
I was going to say fourth or fifth at my
fourth,
house.
Yeah, it's somewhere. It's somewhere. So then bought a still about 10 years ago now.
Okay.
And started playing in the garage. So I had this kind of brewing background and started playing in the garage, making whiskey and making mason jars full of good stuff. And eventually, a couple years into it, people started asking for more and more.
Yeah.
Right? And so we're like, this could actually work out. Let's give this a go. So Rick and I kind of put the business plan together, raised some money, and went after it and officially incorporated in 2016. But we hit shelves about 10 months ago now.
So what was was it all Jim Beam that influenced the decision to go the hard liquor route, the whiskey route, as opposed to craft beer in this city? I mean, or could you have gone either way?
I guess maybe could have gone either way, but I think the Jim Beam definitely pushed me. I mean, essentially, you have to make good beer to make good whiskey, yeah. right? So I had that background, and it just seemed like so much fun not to do,
okay.
right? And you could see the opportunity coming with what had happened with craft beer, that there'd be that opportunity with whiskey out there.
Yeah.
And at the time, Stranahan's was coming on strong, right? So you could see the potential in that that opportunity, and it's just so much fun to do that it was just really interesting for me, you know, the science geek in me wanted to go do that, but also kind of the bootlegger in me as well, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
kind of a little bit of both.
And you saw Blue Sky on whiskey. There was plenty of room to go.
That's right.
I mean, it wasn't saturated, right?
Right.
Yeah. You know, and looking at that craft brewing market, that's a pretty tough one to break into.
Sure.
And craft distilling's not getting any less crowded, but
right.
as good a juice as Owen was making, it seemed like a great way to go about it.
Sweet. Now, do you miss the beer days?
So sometimes,
yeah.
I mean, you're using so much grain and doing the home distilling to get that volume for what you need for distilling. It's just a whole different ball game. And kind of going to open air fermentation sometimes and doing things like that, a little different than you would for like normal beer, processes. It's just a different animal, a lot
okay.
of fun. So once I started taking classes and learning, it was kind of like, this was it.
Gotcha.
You know, I knew. The brew didn't happen for a reason,
okay.
right? And the whiskey kind of came along, and that expertise was like, yes, this is a lot of fun. Let's go.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that conversation that you two had to take this from small batch stuff to, you know, getting the still right and kind of trying to make a business out of it? Was it a long conversation? Was it you were hammered? It was like, let's do it. The next morning you woke up with a loan or what?
You know, it was kind of a morphing conversation. Owen had really originally started to look at doing this with a couple other buddies who went to college with and frat brothers up at CU. Their life changed with kids and families and whatnot. Towards the end of that, before they were transitioning, they kind of brought me into the fold. And they, you know, looked at it. And as positions changed in their lives, they realized they really couldn't take that risk.
Okay.
I'm being a little bit different. My wife and I are dual income, no kids. So I had a little bit more flexibility on front. So it really worked out to once they brought me into the fold, as they kind of had to step back out for Owen and I to get after it together.
Okay. I think Rick and I always looked at it as like, you know, we got to give this a go. Mm-hmm. Like, we're going to look back when we're older going, what if we tried?
Yeah.
And it was just too much fun and too much of an opportunity to go for it. And the opportunities were right. My kids were a little bit older, so I could take some more time away. Yeah. And it balanced out really well with us.
That's awesome.
So who was in town in 2010 when you started doing the bigger stuff? You know, what was the competition? Was Bear Creek around yet? Or
I don't think they were around yet. It was definitely Leopold Brothers and Stranahan's would be the big ones.
Breckenridge.
Breckenridge, of course.
Okay. And Leopold's. At their old location, I toured back in the day, and some of their open-air fermentation really stuck with me as, like, the differences from beer to whiskey and the possibilities. And I think that translates to today as in how you're aging your whiskey and how you're maturing that whiskey. And I think that's where the innovation's really going to increase and grow as the industry moves is different ways. Just because it says it's 12 years doesn't mean it's good whiskey. And so I think that opinion out there is going to be changing and formulating as we grow as an industry, for sure.
So I guess from your perspective, what are you two doing in order to kind of get the Colorado whiskey brand or awareness or respect out there? And the reason, leading question, when we talked to Jay Johnson over at Bear Creek, Jay was talking about finally people are going, oh, this isn't aged 12 years perhaps, but it tastes better than the 12-year aged, you know, stuff. And so there seems to be a little bit more respect coming. So
for sure,
do you kind of have to embrace that as you go out there and you kind of try to, you know, sell the product?
You know, we're welcoming that. You know, I think it's really nice to see that needle moving from what these traditional rules used to be of where the whiskey was made, how it was made, to let me taste it. If I like it, let me hear the story behind it.
Okay.
So there's some really good 4-month whiskeys out there, some 4-month bourbons. Mm-hmm. So it's really that needle's moving from the consumer having to read the statements on there and then judge it to tasting it and then going from there. So it's really nice to see that kind of movement in the consumer perspective.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a rising tide. I mean, especially in Colorado, people are educated on craft beer, craft products. So they're looking for that type of thing.
Yeah.
And they really connect with the story, right? And so if you have a good product and a good story, that's much more attractive to them than some national brand, right? Yeah. So I think people are searching that out more and more. So I think that just helps us one thing that we talk about, you know, we're Lock and Company, like Lock and Company, welcome to our home. Welcome to the bird in our neighborhood to have a drink, right? So Lock and Community, Lock and Colorado, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for our community. And that was really a big differentiator for us, is how to celebrate that, how to use that, how to grow that.
That's really cool, actually, that you wanted to suggest here, because I kind of figured from that email that, you know, this is, you guys see yourselves as very much part of not just Denver as a whole, but also the kind of University Park kind of community and where we are, Wash Park, you know, this kind of area.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, Plant Park.
So, Rick and I are both Colorado natives. I'm lucky to say I'm a sixth-generation Coloradan.
Nice.
Wow.
Family came out in the 1820s to, like, Salida, BV area. My great-great-great-grandfather had one of the first liquor stores in downtown Denver. Would it be, like, Holiday and F Street before they actually redid the streets.
Like 15th Market now,
which is now 15th Market. So, we have some fun old pictures of that. So, that's, it's kind of like... little family tradition for me to be this Colorado kind of Western feel. My grandfather made bathtub gin during Prohibition. So kind of in the blood, kind of just, you know, it's the new West out here, right? So anything goes, let's get fun and get creative. And so I think that that also inspires us in our community for sure.
So after you're making it, after, you know, you're tasting it and it's good to bottle, what's happening then? What year are we talking that you start getting out there and getting, you know, on shelves and in
bars? So to kind of back up a little bit, so what kind of makes us as a product a little different is the aspen wood.
Okay.
Right? And so bought that still 10 years ago, playing in the garage ever since. It's a great hobby. Keeps me off the streets at night, you know. Always fun to have. Good for with, you know, have little babies teething and all that stuff for you and for them. Always a good time. So... took a mason jar rye whiskey from the garage up to Fairplay, Colorado.
Okay.
Rick and I were just actually up there today, chainsawing aspen, getting some aspen
gone. A little bit of extra inventory for the aging, huh?
That's sweet. Right. That's awesome. Right. Got to check on that.
I was through there twice last week. You should have let me know.
Come on by.
Happy to cut shit down and bring it back for you.
That's what we like to hear. We pay in whiskey.
That's the only currency.
That's the only currency
I know.
Jesus.
Beer, whiskey, and sometimes sex, but very rarely infrequently.
Stop looking at me. Then.
Well, it's the tube top.
He said it. Yeah, yeah.
So, took a mason jar of rye whiskey up to Fairplay to shut down the old family cabin. We got like 30 acres off of Weston Pass, so Fairplay into Leadville. Literally drinking by the fire, right? And so threw a chunk of charred aspen to a mason jar full of the R&D rye whiskey.
Yeah.
My Jim Beam experience let me know something was going to happen, but really just messing around, having a good time, right? Yeah. Left that on a southern-facing windowsill up at the cabin.
Yeah.
Hot days, cool nights, got that aspen wood really to work all winter. Came back in the spring, was like, really glad we were drinking by the fire.
That's awesome.
Moral of the story, drink by the fire with friends, right?
Okay.
And that's... that was kind of like, okay, this aspen's going to work. This is going to be different. Let's start playing with this.
Yeah.
So that was about 9 years ago that that happened, and that was really kind of the impetus of making that whiskey and being different out there.
So then starting putting together the business plan, you know, looking at a lot of these craft distilleries out there, you know, they're opening up with...
We need that.
Yeah, sorry. I guess Sam's making a push.
I'm going to get another one.
Let's not fuck with any liquor licenses here. But,
well, you know.
She's not coming back anytime soon.
Help yourselves. So, you know, when we started doing the business plan, that was about 6 years ago, starting to get serious about it, looking at a lot of these craft distilleries opening up. You know, they open up with these great facilities, you know, really eye-catching stills in the corners, some great, you know, some great tasting rooms, really good ambiance. Well, all that's overhead.
Okay.
So when they open up day one, they still have to let their whiskey age. But because they have all this overhead, these capital expenditures, cheers.
Cheers, gentlemen. Pause for effect.
I never get tired of that.
No, that's, you can't. It's just, it's different, but it's not.
That doesn't taste like a true, not in a bad way, but doesn't taste like a rye whiskey to me either.
No, it's different, but it's not offensive.
Yeah. So some of the R&D, you know, as we were going into it, originally it was an 80% rye mash bill. And once we figured out we liked what the charred aspen was adding to the rye whiskey, then we started thinking, well, if we really want the whiskey to play at that wood, instead of cutting it like the log, like Owen pulled out of the fire, which is how you'd cut wood for the barrels, why don't we start cutting that aspen into discs so you can see the rings on the trees, so you're making kind of plates out of that wood?
Which I think I read about on your website a little bit. Maybe not a ton, right?
But because you can't read.
We have pictures. Pictures.
So once we started figuring that out, we're like, well, if you really think about the way the tree pulls nutrients from the soil, up the trunk, to the branches and the leaves, the cells are naturally aligned in that route. Remember high school, the xylem and the phloem cell structure?
No.
We didn't either.
We had to look it up.
There was a
YouTube
video.
Yeah, exactly. So we switched those discs, and whiskey played with that wood a lot. The sweetness that comes from that was a lot more pronounced. So we're losing some of that pepper, some of that spice that Owen and I love out of rye whiskeys. So that's when we updated. It was originally 80, now it's at 95% rye.
Okay, but it's definitely sweeter than a regular rye. Now,
absolutely.
Are you guys charring those discs still?
Yeah.
Okay, so they're still charred.
Yep, so we still char them up. We cut them in that disc structure, let them season, take them down to the Weber grill, get a welding glove, hand char each piece.
Okay.
Wow.
Right, so hand cut, hand charred aspen.
Yeah, about 700 yards from right here, my house is. That's where we char them off.
Yeah, so they're cooking wood right there.
That's right. Come on by. And so that disc cut just gives us so much more flavor. It brings out a little light brown sugar, a little cinnamon, like an herbal kind of fig earth tone to it. Right? So you get that sweetness that you don't really expect from a rye, but you still get that spicy, peppery, right? So rye drinkers tend to like our whiskey because it's a rye, but a little off-center. But we're really approachable from a bourbon drinker standpoint because they like that sweetness from the corn, right?
Yeah.
So we kind of right in the middle for a lot of drinkers.
So you're kind of overlapping a couple of different types of specific drinkers, attractive
to
two or three categories if you're lucky.
That's
trying.
The plan.
At least two, obviously.
Trying.
Three, because my wife will drink anything, so I guess I'm going home with a bottle of this shit.
All the drinkers.
Too. Yeah.
That's so good.
The third whiskey wife.
Yeah.
do you guys, obviously I can't read well enough. What else are we doing? What else are we dropping the aspen into? Anything else right now, or is it just the rye?
So we're just rye whiskey, guys.
That's
so
it right
we
now.
We are playing with other types of woods. Okay. We have a good friend of Owen's. He runs an organic orchard out in the Western Slope in Delta, Colorado. It's like just south of Grand Junction out there. So we're doing some experimentation, and he's given us some different woods like peach, apricot, cherry, pear woods. Again, that we're doing in that disc form, charring those up, and adding that to both our whiskey, our two-year whiskey after the oak barrels, as well as just the raw distillate.
I got a shitty apple tree in the backyard. I need an excuse to cut down, swear to God.
Every time we go like, we cut down all the aspen, they're like, come back next week. We got some aspen for you.
The aspen, I feel like people shouldn't be freaking out about, but the apple tree you can have.
So how do you start, not to cut you off, sorry.
No, always cutting me off.
I can tell when Jay's getting drunk. No, I'm just kidding.
It's still early. My clothes are on.
What kind of conversations are you having to get into bars when you're first trying to get this thing sold? Like, hey, try this. And I guess you would have been good at it, right?
You've got that experience from Jim Beam. But it's kind of a five-step process, which can all happen in a matter of minutes, or it can take it's just still working on some accounts after 9 months of doing that.
Yeah.
So trying to find the decision maker, getting through like the actual GM or the bar manager, getting a meeting on the books to go into face to face, sit down, share the story, share the spirits, always talk price, and then finally trying to get that sale.
Okay.
So that can, like I said, sometimes that happens on the very first day when we do a cold call and walk into an account. Other accounts we've been trying to get into since we hit shelves in September of last year.
So what are the big sellers in town, if you can tell us, like if we wanted to get this, where do we need to go to get it and who's selling the most of it?
Yeah, so we're in about 230 accounts in 10 months across the state, and we're self-distributing. So it's Rick and I doing all the deliveries, all the sales, doing everything. About 30% of that is restaurants and bars. The other 70 is liquor stores, right?
Okay, you stole my question, but...
Hey,
that's good. That's good.
It making
ahead means we're good at our job.
That's right. You're leading me to water.
So you're in 65 restaurants?
Bars and restaurants.
Yeah, that's pretty damn good for 9 months of work.
Good.
That's right.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, we're proud of that. I've been working hard to do it. And again, we couldn't do it without the community helping out, putting our name out there, asking for it, giving us those connections, those decision makers. It's been a huge advantage for us, for sure.
All here in Denver, or are you going kind of elsewhere?
So we're as far north as a wonderful fishing and hunting lodge called Three Forks, which is in northern Colorado, about an hour north of Steamboat. We're in Steamboat, Summit County, Boulder, Fort Collins, Colorado Springs. And then Crested Butte's about the farthest.
Yeah, so
need any
south.
Help in Durango? I'm putting my wife on a bus on Thursday.
Not in Durango yet. So
right.
We'll take it.
Shit, I guess I might have to go with her. She didn't want to hear that, but so we're interestingly enough, right, we're dealing with a craft distillery today, mm-hmm. not a brewery.
Correct.
Usually we're drinking in the premises. This is not your location. But we do have the advantage of looking at a menu here at Bird. And my question is, they got the pineapple basil smash. How much control do you guys have over what happens with your booze once you sell it?
So once we sell it, whenever we're kind of making that sale, people are like, oh, okay, it tastes great, neat, ice. What else can we have, especially on on-premise restaurant accounts, right? So we have some recipe cards that we'll come bring in to kind of get them inspired. Okay. But it's not like, hey, you need to make this, right? So we always kind of bring those along, talk recipes. We like it and this type of thing. But we know the bartender and mixologist, like, that's their art, you know? The last thing you want to do is hand a bartender, like, this is how you make a Manhattan. It's kind of an insult, right? So we try to get some more creative ideas out there to them and say, hey, what do you think? What would you like to play with this? But we try to give some ideas when you go there. One thing that's really fun that we do is we'll reuse the charred aspen discs that we're aging the whiskey. And you'll see us, if you see us at any tasting in a liquor store, we're typically tasting an aspen-aged Manhattan. So we'll have a clear craft stacked with aspen discs that were previously aging our whiskey, and we'll stack that with our rye whiskey, vermouth. We use sweet and dry vermouth, like the perfect Manhattan mm-hmm. recipe. Mm-hmm. So that's aging with our charred aspen and craft that you can see. It's like a barrel-aged cocktail you can see through.
Oh, my God.
So we have that, and then we'll garnish with orange bitters, traditional aromatic bitters, and a cherry for like an aspen-aged Manhattan. So it's like a different take on a barrel-aged cocktail, which is a lot of fun, and some restaurants do that on-premise.
Yeah. Oh, so we could go into some restaurants, and they'll actually have the big glass carafe aging the recipe based on your version.
Yeah, one of the ones that my favorite would be Butcher's Bistro downtown.
Thank you for sharing.
Great job.
Go ahead and, I don't know, where is it?
So Butcher's Bistro, it's a little bit north of the ballpark neighborhood.
Yeah, it's like 27th and Walnut down there. Right.
Yeah, right by kind of the Snooze, the original Snooze restaurant.
Oh,
right across
the
street from Snooze.
Okay. I'll be drinking and eating, well, I'm not going to be doing anything productive, but I'll be in the hood a couple of nights this week.
They do a fabulous one.
Yeah, well, tell them about how they do the cocktail.
Maybe I'll move dinner there Friday night.
There you go.
Oh, that place is awesome.
Yeah, they do great. So they have a craft with some of our charred discs that they're aging their Manhattan on. Okay. And then we give them some of the sawdust when we cut down the aspen trees.
Wow.
We use a vegetable-based bar and chain lubricant so we don't get any petrols on that sawdust.
Holy
shit. We give them a bunch of that sawdust. They created this really cool contraption that sits on an old used oak stave. They put the little sawdust on there and light it up and smoke the little jar that they're going to serve the mm-hmm. cocktail in. Mm-hmm. Put the lid on the jar and then bring out the little kind of wine craft of the Manhattan along with the jar sealed with the smoke inside and pour that into it so the smoke then billows out.
Holy
it's a really cool experience
it's
for a cocktail.
Not just
distillers, they're showmen too.
So wait, let's call back a little bit here. When you were in college drinking this shit, Manhattan's my favorite drink. Now that you're grown ups.
In college we weren't drinking this.
Well, I thought you were going a whole other direction with that question. I'm like, we're lighting the aspen sawdust.
No, that
came out of somebody lighting a fart once upon a time.
Exactly.
You know it.
Exactly.
Whoever's gonna light something on fire, it's gonna happen.
Right. It's a natural progression. So.
But to that point, you know, we really let the bartenders be the artists with the cocktails.
Yeah.
Like here at Bird with the pineapple basil smash, Roxanne's one of the head bartenders managers here. She does a great job making some wonderful cocktails. She had a great wintertime one that had some crushed candy pecans on mm-hmm. the rim.
Wow.
So, you know, we come with some inspiration or some, you know, different recipes that get people thinking beyond like normal standard cocktails and let them come up with it. So, you know, we don't really have a lot of say work that's on the menu because we want them to mm-hmm. make something that they're truly enjoy and mm-hmm. they're behind and pushing.
Out here in Colorado, we have had a crazy long snow season. So skiers and snowboarders out there have basically been able to get deep into June without hanging up any of their gear. And so in celebration of how awesome it's been, our friends over at Denver Sports Lab, Sam and Leaf, wanted to let you know about some specials that they are running. And if you have any questions about what I'm going to tell you here, feel free to give them a call at 720-383-8999, or you can email them at contact@denversportslab.com. Now, before I get into the specials, let me tell you that Sam and Leaf will ship what you need across the country, but these deals are pretty great. And so make sure that you take advantage of them if you're preparing for the next season, or maybe you damaged some gear skiing on those rocks at the back end of this past season. Whatever it is, if you need to get some new gear, make sure that you take advantage of some of these deals. The first deal that Sam and Leaf are running is that you'll get 5% back on any of your 2020 Atomic and Head equipment orders. And so if you make those orders between now and August 1st, they're going to give you 5% back on your purchase. Or if you're a member of a ski team, they will take that 5% and they will give it back to you for team development funds. And so I don't know if you're part of a ski team. A lot of the folks, the Denver Sports Lab helps out. They are part of those ski groups. And so that's one of those perks. But if not, you can just take it for yourself. And so make sure that if you're going to buy any of that 2020 Atomic or Head equipment, you take advantage of that 5% back deal by August 1st. The other thing is they got a lot of stuff left over from 2019. I was just talking to Jay, and I think he and I might be buying some 2019 equipment. If you're looking for some new equipment, shoot them an email, contact@denversportslab.com, because they've got skis from Atomic, Blizzard, Fisher, and Head, as well as boots from Technica and Fisher. If you want to get some new gear and see what they have left over in stock, give Sam and Leaf a call at 720-383-8999. You can also email them at contact@denversportslab.com. Let them know if you're interested in any of that stock that's still there from 2019 or any of those new orders for 2020. You want to make sure they're in by August 1st so you can take advantage of that 5% back. Denver Sports Lab, Sam and Leaf, they are the best in the business. Jay and I will vouch for that. They've taken care of us. They've taken care of our friends. And we would love for you to take advantage of what they can offer. And so in addition to any of those products that I just mentioned, when you're getting ready for the next ski season, make sure that you have Sam and Leaf take care of you, because they are the best tuners in the business. Whether you're a boarder, whether you're a skier, they will take care of you. That's Denver Sports Lab, and you can learn more at denversportslab.com.
And I mean, at the end of the day too, you're hoping that people like me and Sam will walk in and order Lock and Co. Neat, or hey, I want my regular Manhattan with lock instead of whatever your shelf whiskey is. Or
yes, everybody go in and order that, all of that right now. But so one of the things we learned working for Jim Beam is that there was no wrong way to drink whiskey. You're just going to have a really good whatever you're having, right? And so that's kind of our take and our approach. One of the first accounts we got in, one of the regulars was like, I really like your whiskey with Dr. Pepper. And I was like,
I ordered one. It was delicious.
Yeah. We had no idea. We had never thought of that. It was actually turned out really great because of the sweetness
cinnamon,
from that.
Cinnamon
kind of complements it. It was a lot of fun. And so we're like, yeah, you know, take feedback from the community, right?
That's
and
something, you know, we learned from Fred Ngo. So he's the master distiller over at Jim Beam.
Okay.
So we worked for Jim Beam, did some events with him. And he'd always say, you know, someone orders our Booker's, which is their kind of their top line barrel strength bourbon with a bourbon and Diet Coke. It's just going to be the best bourbon and Diet Coke. He's like, if they're buying your whiskey, don't ever make someone feel bad for how they order it, because, you know, they're buying it.
That's a good point, actually. Like, that's it's so non-pretentious. And I worry that sometimes even in craft beer, we go down that path, you know. Oh, you're not going to drink that, you know, whatever cherry pie hazy or whatever. Like,
right.
No thanks. That's not my drink. It was just like a nice Pilsner. But,
and,
you know.
And that kind of segues well. Like, we're kind of looking at our bottle here. It's got like this flask shape. It does fit in our pants as a flask, but not all pants. Is our disclaimer.
I'm getting new pants.
They're wearing JNCOs right now.
But
oh,
so,
JNCOs?
Is that JNCOs, whatever they were.
Late 90s rave reference?
God. Exactly. Oh, man.
Yes.
That's where the toot cop comes in.
Was it just JNCO? That's where they stole the co from Lock and Co.
That makes total sense now. It's all coming together. Yes.
But people always, we have like a big plus sign on our bottle where Lock and Co. with a plus sign, like Lock plus Co., right? So, you know, we saw that in the market too. It's like whiskey was pretty exclusive. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to be more inclusive and add people to the experience, kind of just add them to the fire where we started.
Yeah.
Right? So we highlight that plus sign in all our marketing to add people and be more inclusive around the area. And I think that's important for us to kind of note and always kind of achieve. That's why we're here at Bird. They're part of our community to add them to this, right? So we're always looking for opportunities to do that. And people are always like, why is there a cross on your bottle? Oh, it's a plus sign because we want to add you to this.
That's perfect. I like it.
Is that Colorado cliche of no friends on powder days? Like Owen and I always growing up, we'd rather be with our friends in the woods hooping and hollering.
Safety first always.
Yeah,
but
of course.
So we want to add people to that experience. You know, it's Lock and Company, as Owen said earlier, not as in like a business, but Lock and Company as in guests in our home.
That's so awesome.
That is crazy. Now, what?
No, go ahead.
Oh, so I'm going to dig back a little bit. You guys have been doing this a year almost.
Yeah,
on shelves for a year.
On shelves for almost a year. You guys, sounds like you've been doing it for 15 or 20 years.
Yeah, right.
Wow. We won't go back that far.
Drinking but, professionally for a while.
Yeah, that's yeah, yeah. Right. Drinking professionally since 1997.
Yes, exactly.
Owen mentioned Stranahan's earlier, and I'm a local kid and have a pretty good tie to Stranahan's myself. It hit home a little bit when they sold out, right? Or when they sold off.
Right.
Okay. I'm not going to accuse anybody of selling out necessarily, but we know at the end of the day, Sam and I have done enough of these interviews and met with enough breweries and talked to enough people in the industry in town that there are two, maybe three, somewhere in the middle, types of craft beverage purveyors. And some of them get into it for the love of craft, and this is all they're going to do, and they're never going to fuck with it, right? And some of them, and I'm not going to name names, but we can tell in a meeting, and you can tell when you look at the marketing and whatever else, some of them are there to create an okay product and sell.
Sure.
I'm not accusing you guys of one thing or the other by any means, but I mean, you haven't even got 12 months of sales on the books. So what's next?
What next is continuing that R&D that got us involved in the whiskey industry, you know, or getting into distilling is that creative part. So that's why we're, you know, continuing to play with other woods. Once we get enough inventory, more barrels, we'll hold some back for some different limited releases and continuing to expand the lineup. But, you know, Owen and I talked about this internally, and, you know, for us, we'd be happy having our whiskey company that's paying our bills, getting us, you know, with our families and our friends on the holidays, and we'd be happy. You know, when we talk to our investors, we got to toe that line a little bit better.
Sure.
And say, no, we want to grow this.
We don't look like investors, by the way. We're not investors here. So
we'd
not
be
yet.
Happy to not hand yet. It off to Owen's kids and have them be, you know, the next generation of Lock & Co. Of you know, runners and founders and whiskey sellers.
Yeah, and I would also add, you know people sell off and go that route. If that didn't happen, we wouldn't have investors.
Mm-hmm.
We
sure.
wouldn't be here. So we need that to happen in the market for people to grow and show that experience. That's what's going to create the opportunity for other people to do the same, right? So that's a good thing that they did that because it shows the possibilities. But you also have to know, we're not in this to sell off. We're in this to add people to our community, mm-hmm. right?
There it is again.
You know, I mean, I guess at some point there might be a magical number that we come to. I mean,
everyone's
I
got
don't know.
Some kind of number.
I love hearing that from people.
It's an honesty. Right?
Yeah, I mean, it's true, too.
Someone slides it across the desk. You're like,
exactly.
Right. But I think we'd always want to be a part of it. And for us, you know, especially playing with the Aspen and controlling that piece of it and working through, like, I don't know if we'd ever let that go.
Right? So talking about Aspen, too, then, right? I mean, don't let go. But what else can you put the Aspen mm-hmm. into? Like we talked about, you're going to try other woods, but let's go the other direction. What other liquids, what other juices can you add Aspen to and just totally skew the taste and attract a different level of drinker at that point? I mean, what else? I'm sure the opportunities ultimately are endless, but let's not cliche it here. Like, what are you thinking about? Are you looking at anything special or different?
So the first thing that we've done is, again, trying to create community out there. We'll give breweries our 30-gallon barrels for free.
God love Mockery.
Wow. And that's how we got in touch with Mockery. I'm like, hey, you got to pick them up and you got to promote us on your tap room and social media, but the barrels are free.
You pick them up,
make some collab.
That's a pretty fucking good marketing approach.
We also ask for beer, let's be honest. We want some of the beer.
All right.
Geez,
whiskey, beer, and sex.
Right, you know? And so when we're like, hey, we reach out to breweries like, hey, do you want these barrels? And we're also like, hey, do you want the charred Aspen? And so the charred Aspen's totally unique.
Aspen aged beer sounds delicious to us, right?
Right.
No, it sounds amazing. Right. Has anybody taken you up on that yet?
Absolutely. So Sanitas up in Boulder, Ty and Timber out of Missouri. So a couple places, Alternation just here on Broadway.
Yeah, yeah.
Tommyknocker's up in Idaho Springs.
Tommyknocker.
Did you line that up?
Trying.
Sorry, we're always working here.
No, I like that. I like that. So when we give them that charred Aspen, because my brewing days background, I'm like, there's a brewer out there who's loving to have this. They just don't know.
Yeah.
But so the nice part about that is most barrel-aged beers are like an Imperial Stout, Imperial Brown, something like that with a high-level alcohol. They're worried about evaporation loss in the barrel.
Right.
So if you give them the charred Aspen, they have like empty kegs, fermenter, some sort of container. They can seal that up. So what that ends up happening is they can open that up to any beer style. So you get to have an Aspen-aged lager, Aspen-aged IPA. Now, maybe some beers wouldn't pair well, but the experimentation, the possibilities, like you're asking about, what else could you do? The beer world's where we started. You know, I know Rick is an avid pizza fan. And so, like, a wood fire pizza made from our charred Aspen.
Damn, I'm getting hungry.
Things like that, right? Wow. So I think those are our opportunities there. As far as, like, other products with Aspen, we haven't really explored that. We're kind of working rye, different variations on that, not necessarily with the Aspen first, but that's a good question. You know, I could see an Aspen-aged gin out there.
Yeah, right? If somebody hasn't planted the seed, let me take credit for it at the very least.
We're stealing that now.
Yeah, done. You can steal another one too, but this one I want 10% of. Why the hell aren't you doing a collaborative brew as your former brewer self plus the whiskey? Like, why don't you walk in and make a beer someplace and be like, this is a Lock & Company beer via Mockery?
I mean, I guess that has been done. So Sanitas, they released, what was it called? The Marauder, which was the Aspen Age Stout. So they carried that in their tap room, had our logo on there. So
they're co-branding.
Co-branding. It's just going to keep growing and growing that way. Again, kind of being 10 months into it, we're still trying to walk through that instead of getting after it. But
and for us going in and being like, let's go brew beer. And again, when there's two of us, there's not a shortage of things to do, and adding brewing beer onto the list, we just don't have the time. We got to focus on the whiskey right now.
Well, I'm going to
beer, but that would be
good. That would pumpkin be a killer beer pumpkin beer.
That would be, like, I was just thinking that, like, that's the answer.
That spice, yeah I think, like, that would complement
that's
that
not
really
a,
well.
That's not a bad idea. Pumpkin spice latte pumpkin spice locking.
I could be talked into drinking
out
a
Howard
pumpkin
Schultz.
Beer.
but I extend the challenge now to some brewer out there, some brewery. Call Owen Locke, tie him up for a week, get his ass in there, and let him brew on your system with his ingredients and his fucking whiskey. Done. Challenge extended.
If he's taking a week off, he has to use PTO.
Yeah, make him cash that shit in.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
I, coming off a week-long vacation that I got dinged for, believe me, I get it. I think it's good for you guys. I mean, it's probably a pain in the ass for people like us that don't do anything real every day to challenge you on what are you doing in month 11 when you're only in month 10. So I apologize for that. But
no, it's a good question.
A ton of potential as far as, I mean, what little I know about it. So,
well, I will say this, and sorry, I mean, Rick was going to say something. Obviously he's the one being interviewed, not me, but in the last 12 months going into a liquor store, I have seen this on shelves more and more and more. And the fact that you just started distributing 12 months ago, roughly, goes to show that not only are you, you know, professionals in the sales space, but you're making a fantastic juice, as Jay likes to say.
Yeah. I don't like to say it. I hear it from these guys all the time.
It's delicious.
You know, with a new product, it has been, especially in liquor stores, they're willing to try it out.
Okay.
The hard part is those reorders.
Okay.
So that's where anytime we get into a liquor store, we're always trying to get either a hand sale or a tasting on the books as quickly as possible. Okay. You know, twofold. One, we get out there in front of more customers or potential customers. We can share the story. Hopefully, if we're doing a tasting, share the spirit. But also, we get to talk to the employees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being a two-person team, the more employees that we get to connect with, build those relationships with, then they're going to be our sales reps. You know, so building those organic relationships by going in and just being ourselves, mm-hmm. but also putting in that work. You know, we're the two guys with the boots on the ground. We're the two guys that we'll drive up to Boulder for a one-bottle delivery because they're sold out of our, you know, at Lazy Dog, they sold out, for example. But, you know, going in and really making sure if it's a liquor store, getting in for those staff or the tastings of the hand sales, and then on bars or restaurants, those staff trainings.
That makes sense.
You know, the worst thing we want is to get into a bar, have someone ask the bartender, hey, what's that? And they're like, I don't know. It showed up last week. I know nothing about it.
Yeah.
So scheduling those staff trainings in bars and restaurants or those tastings in hand sales and accounts at liquor stores right after we get on the shelves has been
super
important.
What's a hand sale?
Thank you.
So liquor stores have tasting licenses. So they're pretty cheap. It's maybe $30 a year, but you only get so many. So they can only allocate however many they chose for the year for people actually being able to pour samples. So on the event when they don't have an opening, we can just show up and walk the aisle and just talk about our product.
Ah. So the customer doesn't taste, we hand them the bottle for the sale. So it's called a hand sale in the industry because you're not tasting them on the product, you're just talking.
But you're allowed to do that whenever the liquor store is willing to let you in.
Exactly.
Which pretty much if we say in hand sale, they're like, sure, great, come make us money.
They want the owner in there.
So what, you guys must be working way more than 40 hours a week then. If it's just you two, you're out there.
Yeah, you got it.
Holy shit.
You got it.
I'll check the punch clock.
I was going to say, don't remind them. Jesus. The fact that they're sitting here drinking with us at 3:45 on a... I don't even know what day it is, frankly, but
no,
Tuesday?
I'm thinking we got to find some internships for our seniors coming up.
There we go.
Always working. Yeah. I told you. Yeah. Always working. Yeah. So yeah, we're talking liquor stores. I got to ask this other question because I was actually buying whiskey in Breckenridge on the 3rd of July. It's a bold question, probably. What's your price point on something like this in a liquor store? I mean, this 750.
750 mils.
Thank you, because I don't ever get that right. Ever.
Math is hard.
I always point at the one. I'm like, I want that one. No, that one, that one, that one.
That's what you want for your banker, right?
Somebody's right, that's right. Math.
Fuck off.
That's right. Front Range area, I would say it's typically between, I don't know, maybe as low as 57 at a couple places, but typically between 65 and 69.
We like to see it at 69.
Okay. That's a good number. I mean, it's approachable, right? It's not a scary number. It's not a bottle of Jameson, which is kind of the first thing we grab at my house for no apparent reason other than the fact that we're fake Irish. But 69 is not, I mean.
That's our MSRP. Obviously, we can't price fix, so you know, the count charges what they charge. Yeah. In the mountains, Summit County, up in Steamboat, Rao County, you know, they're charging more just from the.
Yeah, and honest to Christ, I don't think I even noticed you guys on the wall the other day, but man, shelves were scarce on the 3rd of July in downtown Breckenridge, so that's nobody's fault. But yes, I mean, $69, that's not a bad price for a bottle of whiskey at all. I mean, I spent, God, I would never tell him that, and he's never going to listen to this episode, maybe, but I only spent $50 on a bottle of bourbon for my boss last week for his birthday, so apparently it's a good bottle of bourbon, but who the fuck knows?
I know you guys.
It was scotch, never mind.
I know you're obviously, you know, you got to go run some product around, but I want to ask, we talked about the sales stuff, but what's marketing? What are you guys doing in order to kind of get the brand out there?
Yeah, so, you know, we try to do social media as much as possible, but really kind of the ground floor guerrilla marketing is our key.
Yeah.
Creating relationships with those decision makers, with those people.
Yeah.
That's our marketing vehicle for now. I mean, we do have some stuff out there. We had a nice write-up in 5280 Magazine last month, which was great. Doing, you know, podcasts like this is always super awesome for us. But essentially, it's the two of us. Yeah. We're trying to get it done. So we don't have the marketing budget. So a lot of distilleries would go out there and try to go to, like, every festival, right? And so that's all day, free product, and you probably have to pay to attend that festival. Mm-hmm. We shy away from a lot of that.
Yeah.
Because we want to be at the liquor store, at the restaurant, moving sales, talking to people who are actually going to buy, right? So we're always trying to focus a little bit more that way than a different route.
Maybe not shy away from it. I would say more strategically analyze the festivals. So, you know, for example, Farm to Bottle, which is a wonderful festival near here on Old South Gaylord Street, happens every late September. We were involved in that for the first time last year, but we're in the VIP area. So that only had about 100 patrons versus the full festival, which was 800. Mm-hmm. So these first couple of years, we have to watch that inventory and how much we're giving away and where we're giving that away. We want to be involved in all these events
because
that's where we get to really share the in-depth kind of stories, you know, at the liquor stores and staff trainings. It's more of the elevator pitch, the quick kind of 2-3 minute, you know, speech. But we love the opportunity to really kind of, you know, connect with people who are really whiskey enthusiasts or interested in the brand. So we want to be involved as many as we can. We're just really strategic about it, especially these first couple of years when it's the two of us plus the community to help us out and the inventory levels that we currently have.
Yeah, year one we had 32 barrels, right? So, you know, you may have read in the newspaper, like, Jim Beam just lost 45,000 barrels to a fire. And we can't even imagine that. Like, it's just, right? But I mean, we had 32 barrels. So it's small stuff. So we just can't be giving away that much at this time.
Sure.
So the marketing is kind of going back to that, as Owen was saying. You know, we do some of that social media posts, but it's really focusing on those decision makers, supporting the accounts that we get into. Because naturally, if they like us, someone asks, hey, I'm looking for a local rye whiskey. They'll be more likely to talk about us.
I just, not to give away my secrets, but I can see one of those Hollywood types who goes to Aspen in December carrying around a bottle of these. So, social media influencer.
Yeah, Kanye. A picture of Kanye, no, your daughter, like, no, and think, a bottle of Lock & Co.
Or even like a Denverite, right? Like a TJ Miller. You know, yeah, leverage and there you go to do.
Let's not hitch our wagon to TJ just yet.
I'm just saying there are shortcuts out there for marketing. Sure, for sure.
There definitely are. You know, long story short, or long answer short, which was a great answer, by the way. All Sam was asking was, can he get a sticker for his suitcase?
Yeah, exactly. Done. Exactly. I need that shirt.
Done.
All right,
so we have
Rick.
T-shirts and stickers for sure.
Rick, Owen, you two.
Yeah, gentlemen, that was awesome.
Was wonderful.
Cheers.
Thank you so much. So we can find you anywhere in town, basically, right? So anybody comes in here.
Keep a lookout for us. Come say hi at the tastings. We're always autographing bottles wherever we go. Autograph batch one bottles, always fun to have. So come find us.
Yeah, batch one's almost out, so batch two will be coming out soon.
Oh, shit. I'm going to get a batch one.
This is
going to
go tomorrow, so where are you this weekend? Like, what are the tastings? Do you know this weekend?
I'm actually taking the weekend off.
Okay. All right.
PTO.
All
right. Check the time clock.
Anywhere Total they... Wine tomorrow.
Evans in University.
Colorado. Colorado over there. Yeah. I'll be in Glenwood Springs on Friday, and I have a wedding on
Saturday.
I'll
be down in Colorado Springs on Thursday before I take off. Right. And we're doing a private tasting up in Sea Lazy U Ranch tomorrow night. So.
All right. We're in Colorado Springs. We got a lot of fans.
InterQuest Liquors right there off InterQuest Boulevard.
Perfect.
Off 525.
Right. Go get it. Go taste it. It's one of those – it's a whiskey that you can drink in the middle of summer. It's 90 degrees out right now, but I feel like this would be pretty good when I'm trying to get away from my parents at Christmas too.
Or Friday night.
Or Friday night. They are coming into town. All right. Thank you guys so much.
Cheers, guys. Have a great day.
Yeah, appreciate it. When they come to tea.